Winwood. I repeat his name in my head so I'll know exactly what to search when I get to my computer. Surely I have a computer. When I reach my room, the first thing I do is walk to my dresser. I pick up the pen Charlie handed me earlier today and read the imprint again. Winwood Nash Financial Group. I search the room until I finally find a laptop stuffed in the drawer of my bedside table. I power it on and enter the password. I remember the password? Add that to the list of shit that makes no sense. I type Winwood Nash Financial Group into the search engine. I click on the first result and I'm taken to a page that reads Nash Finance, with the Winwood noticeably absent. I scroll quickly through the page and discover nothing that helps, just a bunch of useless company contact information. I back out of the page and scroll through the rest of the results, reading each of the leading headlines and the articles that follow. Finance gurus Clark Nash and Brett Winwood, co-founders of Winwood Nash Financial Group, have been charged with 4 counts of conspiracy, fraud, and illegal trading. Partners for over 20 years, the two business moguls are now placing the blame on each other, both claiming to have no knowledge of the illegal practices uncovered during a recent investigation. I read another. Clark Nash cleared of charges. Company co-chair Brett Winwood sentenced to 15 years for fraud and embezzlement. I make it to the second page of search results when the battery light begins to flash on the laptop. I open the drawer, but there's no charger. I look everywhere, under the bed, in the closet, in my dresser drawers. The laptop dies during my search. I begin to use my phone to research, but it's about to die too, and the only phone charger I can find plugs into a laptop. I keep looking because I need to know exactly what happened to make these two families hate each other so much. I lift the mattress, thinking maybe the charger could be stuck behind the bed somehow. I don't find the charger, but I do find what looks like a notebook. I slide it out from under the mattress and then take a seat on top of the bed. Right when I open it up to the first page, my phone vibrates with an incoming text. Charlie, how are things with your father? I want to learn more before deciding what I want to share with her. I ignore the text and open the notebook to find stacks of papers stuffed into a folder. Across the top, the papers all read Winwood Nash Financial Group, but I don't understand any of them. I also don't understand why these were hidden beneath my mattress. Clark Nash's words from downstairs repeat in my head. I know you don't think she took those files from this office, Silas, but I know she did. Looks like he was wrong. But why would I have taken them? What would I have needed with them? Who was I trying to protect? My phone buzzes again with another text. Charlie, there's this really neat feature on your phone called Read Receipts. If you're going to ignore texts, you should probably turn that off. Winky face. At least she put a winky face. Me, not ignoring you, just tired. We have a lot to figure out tomorrow. Charlie,
yeah.
That's all she says. I'm not sure if I should respond to her effortless reply, but I don't want her to be irritated if I don't respond. Me. Good night, Charlie, baby. Winky face. As soon as I hit send, I want to retract it. I don't know what I was going for with that reply. Not sarcasm, but definitely not flirtation either. I decide to regret it tomorrow. Right now, I just need sleep so I can make sure I'm awake enough in the morning to deal with all of this. I shove the notebook back under the mattress and see a wall charger, so I plug it into my phone. I'm too exhausted to keep searching tonight, so I kick off my shoes. It isn't until I lie down that I notice Ezra changed my sheets. As soon as I turn the lamp off and close my eyes, my phone vibrates. Charlie.
Good night, Silas.
Her lack of endearment doesn't go unnoticed, but for some inexplicable reason, the text still makes me smile. Typical Charlie, I think.
Chapter 9. Charlie. It is not a good night. The trapdoor to the attic is in the closet I share with my sister. After I text Silas goodnight, I climb the 3 shelves, which are bursting with fabric, and push upward with my fingertips until it shifts left. I glance back over my shoulder and see that Jeanette hasn't looked up from her phone. This must be normal, me climbing into the attic, leaving her behind. I want to ask if she'll come with me, but it was exhausting just to get her to come to dinner. Another time, I think. I'll figure out how to fix things between us. I don't know why, but as I hoist myself through the hole and into an even smaller space, I picture Silas's face, the tan, smooth skin, his full lips. How many times had I tasted his mouth, and yet I can't remember a single kiss. The air is warm and stuffy. I crawl on my knees to a pile of pillows and press my back to them, straightening my legs out in front of me. There's a flashlight standing atop a pile of books. I click it on, examining their spines. Stories I know but don't remember reading. How odd to be made of flesh, balanced on bone, and filled with a soul you've never met. I pick up her books one by one and read the first page of each. I want to know who she is, who I am. When I've exhausted the pile, I find a larger book at the bottom, bound in creased red leather. My immediate thought is that I found a journal. My hands shake as I fold open the pages. Not a journal, a scrapbook. Letters from Silas. I know this because he signs each one with a sharp S that almost looks like a lightning bolt. And I know I like his handwriting, direct and distinct. Paperclipped to the top of each note is a photo, presumably one that Silas has taken. I read one note after another, poring over words. Love letters. Silas is in love. It's beautiful. He likes to imagine a life with me. In one letter, written on the back of a brown paper sack, he details the way we will spend Christmas when we have our own place. Spiked apple cider by the Christmas tree. Raw cookie dough that we eat before we get the chance to bake it. He tells me he wants to make love to me with only candles lighting the room, so that he can see my body glow in the candlelight. The photo paperclipped to the note is of a tiny Christmas tree that looks like it's in his bedroom. We must have set it up together. I find another written on the back of a receipt in which he details what it feels like to be inside of me. My face grows warm as I read the note over and over, reveling in his lust. The photo paperclipped to this one is of my bare shoulder. His photos pack a punch, just like his words. They take my breath, and I'm not sure if the part of me I can't remember is in love with him. I feel only curiosity toward the dark-haired boy who looks at me so earnestly. I set the note aside, feeling like I'm snooping on someone else's life, and close the book. This belonged to Charlie. I'm not her. I fall asleep, surrounded by Silas's words, the sprinkling of letters and sentences swirling around in my head until a girl drops to her knees in front of me. "Listen to me," she whispers. "We don't have much time." But I don't listen to her. I push her away, and then she's gone. I am standing outside. There is a fire burning from an old metal trash can. I rub my hands together to get warm. From somewhere behind me, I can hear a saxophone playing, but the sound morphs into a scream. That's when I run. I run through the fire that was in the trash can, but now it is everywhere, licking the buildings along the street. I run, choking on smoke, until I see one pink-faced storefront that is free of flame and smoke, though everything around it burns. It is a shop of curiosities. I open the door without thought, because it is the only place safe from the flames. Silas is there waiting for me. He leads me past bones and books and bottles and takes me to a back room. A woman sits on a throne made of broken mirror, staring down at me with a thin smile on her lips. The pieces of mirror reflect slices of light across the walls where they jiggle and dance. I turn to look at Silas, to ask him where we are, but he's gone. Hurry! I wake with a start. Jeanette is leaning through the slat of space in the closet roof, shaking my foot. "You have to get up," she says. "You don't have any more skip days left." I am still in the dank attic space. I wipe the sleep from my eyes and follow her down the three shelves to our room. I'm touched she knows I'm out of skip days and that she cared enough to wake me up. I'm shaking when I reach the bathroom and turn on the shower. I haven't shaken the dream. I can still see my reflection in the broken shards of her throne. The fire swims in and out of my vision, waiting behind my eyelids every time I blink. If I concentrate, I can smell the ash above the body wash I'm using, above the sickeningly sweet shampoo I pour into my hand. I close my eyes and try to remember Silas's words. You are warm and wet, and your body grips me like it doesn't want me to leave. Jeanette pounds on the door. Late! She yells. I hurry to dress, and we're tumbling out the front door before I realize I don't even know how Jeanette expects we're getting to school today. I told Silas to pick me up yesterday. Amy should be here already, Jeanette says. She folds her arms across her chest and peers down the street. It's like she can't even stand to look at me. I pull out my phone and text Silas to let him know not to pick me up. I also check to see if this Amy has texted me, right as a little silver Mercedes whips around the corner. Amy, I say. I wonder if she's one of the girls I sat with at lunch yesterday. I hardly noticed names and faces. The car pulls to the curb and we walk forward. Jeanette climbs into the back seat without a word, and after a few seconds of deliberation, I open the front door. Amy is black. I stare at her in surprise for a minute before I climb in the car. Hey, she says without looking over. I'm grateful for her distraction because I have a moment to study her. Hi. She's pretty. Her hair, which is lighter than her skin, is braided to her waist. She seems at ease with me, not to mention she's giving my sour sister and me a ride to school. We must be good friends, I decide. Glad to see you're feeling better. Did you figure out what you're going to do about Silas? She asks me. Silas? Uh-huh, she says. That's what I thought. You still don't know. It's a shame, too, because you guys can be really good together when you try. I sit in silence until we've almost reached the school, wondering what she means. Amy, I say, how would you describe my relationship with Silas to someone who has never met us? See, this is your problem, she says. You always want to play games. She pulls up to the front of the school and Jeanette climbs out. It's all like clockwork. Bye, I call as the door closes. She's so mean, I say, facing forward again. Amy pulls a face. And you're queen of nice. Seriously, I don't know what's come over you. You're even more out of it than normal. I chew on my lips as we pull into the high school parking lot. I open the door before the car has even stopped. What the hell, Charlie? I don't wait to hear what else she has to say. I run for the school, my arms wrapped tightly around my torso. Did everyone hate me? I duck my head as I push through the doors. I need to find Silas. People are looking at me as I walk the hallway. I don't look left or right, but I can feel their eyes. When I reach for my phone to text Silas, it's gone. I ball up my fists. I had my phone when I texted him and told him I didn't need a ride. I must have left it in Amy's car. I'm on my way back toward the parking lot when someone calls my name. Brian. I glance around to see who's watching us as he jogs toward me. His eye still looks a little bruised from where I punched him. I like that. What? I say. You hit me. He stops a few feet away like he's afraid I'm going to do it again. I suddenly feel guilty. I shouldn't have done that. Whatever game I'd been playing with him before all of this happened wasn't his fault. I'm sorry, I say. I haven't been myself lately. I shouldn't have done that. It looks like I've told him exactly what he wants to hear. His face relaxes, and he runs a hand along the back of his neck as he looks at me. Can we go somewhere more private to talk? I look around at the crowded hallway and shake my head. No. All right, he says. Then we can do this here. I shift from one foot to another and look over my shoulder. Depending on how long he takes, I can still catch Amy and get the keys to her car and... It's Silas or me? My head jerks back to look at him. What? I love you, Charlie. Oh, God. I feel itchy all over. I take a step back, looking around for someone to help me get out of this. Now is a really bad time for me, Brian. I need to find Amy and-
I know you guys have history, but you've been unhappy for a long time. That guy's a dick, Charlie.
You saw what happened with the shrimp. I'm surprised. What are you talking about? He looks put out that I've interrupted his speech. I'm talking about Silas and— No, the shrimp thing. People are stopping to watch us now. Clusters of nosiness form at lockers. Eyes, eyes, eyes on my face. I'm so uncomfortable with this. I hate it. Her. Brian jerks his head left just as a girl pushes through the doors and makes her way past us. When she sees me looking, her face turns a bright pink color, like a shrimp. I recognize her from my class yesterday. She was the one on the floor picking up the books. She's tiny. Her hair is an ugly shade of greenish brown, like she tried to dye it herself and it went terribly wrong. But even if she hadn't dyed it, it looks sad. Jagged, uneven bangs, oily and lank. She has a smattering of pimples across her forehead and a nose that's pugged. My first thought is ugly, but it's more of a fact than a judgment. She skitters away before I can blink, disappearing into a crowd of onlookers. I have a feeling she hasn't left. She's waiting right behind their backs. She wants to hear. I felt something. When I saw her face, I felt something. My head is swimming when Brian reaches for me. I let him grab me by the elbow and pull me toward his chest. It's me or Silas, he says again. He's being bold since I already punched him for touching me. But I'm not thinking about him. I'm thinking about the girl, the shrimp, wondering if she's back there hiding behind everyone else. I need an answer, Charlie. He has me so close that when I look into his face, I can see the freckles in his eyes. Then my answer is Silas, I say softly. He freezes. I can feel the stiffening of his body.
Chapter 10. Silas. You gonna show up for practice today? Landon asks. He's already standing outside my door, and I don't even remember pulling into the parking lot of the school, much less turning off the car. I nod, but fail to make eye contact with him. I'd been so lost inside my own thoughts during the drive over, I didn't even think to prod him for information. I've been hung up on the fact that I didn't wake up with memories. I was hoping Charlie was right, that we would wake up and everything would be back to normal. But we didn't, and it's not. Or at least I didn't wake up with memories. I haven't spoken to Charlie since last night, and her text this morning revealed nothing. I didn't even open the text. It flashed on my lock screen, and I read enough of the first sentence to know I didn't like how it made me feel. My thoughts immediately wandered to who might be picking her up and if she was okay with it. My protective instincts kick in whenever it comes to her, and I don't know if it's always been that way or if it's because she's the only one I can relate to right now. I get out of the car, determined to find her. Make sure she's okay, even though I know she more than likely is. I don't have to know any more about her to know that she doesn't really need me to take care of her. She's fiercely independent. That doesn't mean I won't still try. When I enter the school, it occurs to me that I don't know where to begin searching for her. Neither of us can remember which lockers are ours, and considering this happened to us both during fourth period yesterday, we have no idea where our first, second, or third period classes are. I decide to walk to the administration office and see about getting a new copy of my schedule. Hopefully Charlie thought to do the same, because I doubt they'll give me hers. The secretary is unfamiliar, but she smiles knowingly at me.
Here to see Ms. Ashley Silas.
Ms. Ashley. I start to shake my head no, but she's already pointing me in the direction of an open office door. Whoever Ms. Ashley is, I must visit her enough that my presence in the office isn't unusual. Before I make it to the open office door, a woman steps out. She's tall, attractive, and appears extremely young to be an employee. Whatever she does here, she hasn't been doing it long. She barely looks old enough to be out of college.
Mr. Nash,
she says with a vague smile, flicking her blonde hair back over her shoulder.
Do you have an appointment?
I pause and stop my advancement toward her. I glance back at the secretary right when Ms. Ashley waves it off.
It's fine, I have a few minutes. Come inside.
I move gingerly past her, taking in the nameplate on the door as I enter her office. Avril Ashley, guidance counselor. She closes the door behind me and I look around the office, which is decorated in motivational quotes and typical posters portraying positive messages. I suddenly feel uncomfortable, trapped. I should have said I didn't need to see her, but I'm hoping this counselor, one I apparently visited regularly, will know a few things about my past that may be of help to Charlie and me. I turn just as Ms. Ashley's hand slides down the door and reaches the lock. She turns it and then begins to saunter toward me. Her hands meet my chest, and right before her mouth connects with mine, I stumble backward and catch myself on a filing cabinet. Whoa, what the hell? She looks offended that I just shook off her advance. This must not be unusual behavior with us. I'm sleeping with the guidance counselor? I immediately think of Charlie, and based on our obvious non-commitment to one another, I question what kind of relationship we had. Why were we even together?
Is something wrong?
Ms. Ashley says. I turn slightly and take a few steps away from her toward the window. Not feeling very well today. I look her in the eyes and force a smile. Don't want to get you sick. My words put her at ease, and she closes the space between us again, this time leaning in and pressing her lips against my neck.
Poor thing, she purrs. Want me to make you feel better?
My eyes are wide, darting around the room, mapping out my escape route. My attention falls to the computer on her desk and then a printer behind her chair. Ms. Ashley, I say, gently pushing her away from my neck. This is wrong on so many levels. She laughs.
You never call me that when we're alone. It's weird.
She's too comfortable with me. I need to get out of here. Avril, I say, smiling at her again. I need a favor. Can you print a copy of mine and Charlie's schedules? She immediately straightens up, her smile whisked away at the mention of Charlie's name. Point of contention, apparently. I'm thinking about switching a couple of my classes so I won't have to be around her as much. Couldn't be further from the truth. Ms. Ashley, Avril, slides her fingers down my chest, the smile reappearing on her face.
Well, it's about time. Finally decided to take the counselor's advice, I see.
Her voice drips with sex. I can see how things must have started up with her, but it makes me feel shallow. It makes me hate who I was. I shift on my feet as she works her way to her seat and begins clicking at her keyboard. She pulls freshly printed pages from the printer and walks them over to me. I attempt to take the schedules from her hand, but she pulls them away with a grin.
She says, shaking her head slowly. These are gonna cost you.
She leans against her desk and lays the sheets of paper beside her, face down. She brings her eyes back to mine, and I can see I'm not leaving without appeasing her, which is the last thing I want to do right now. I take two slow steps toward her and rest my hands on either side of her. I lean into her neck and can hear her gasp when I begin to speak. Avril, I only have 5 minutes left before I have to be in class. There's no way I can do all the things I want to do to you in just 5 minutes. I slip my hand to the schedules lying on her desk and I back away with them. She's tugging on her bottom lip, staring up at me with heated eyes.
Come back during lunch, she whispers. Will an hour be sufficient, Mr. Nash?
I wink at her. I guess it'll have to do, I say, as I head out the door. I don't pause until I'm down the hallway and around the corner, out of her line of sight. The 18-year-old irresponsible side of me wants to high-five myself for having apparently snagged the school counselor, but the reasonable side of me wants to punch myself for doing something like that to Charlie. Charlie is obviously the better choice, and I hate knowing that I was putting that relationship at risk. But then again, so is Charlie. Luckily, the schedules list our locker numbers and combinations. Hers is 543 and mine is 544. I'm guessing that was intentional. I open my locker first and find three textbooks stacked inside. There's a half-empty coffee in front of the books and an empty cinnamon roll wrapper. There are two pictures taped to the inside of the locker, one of Charlie and me, the other just of Charlie. I pull the picture of her down and stare at it. Why, if we weren't happy together, do I have pictures of her in my locker? Especially this one. I obviously took it, as it's similar in style to the pictures hanging around my room. She's sitting cross-legged on a couch. Her head is tilted slightly and she's staring directly at the camera. Her eyes are intense, looking into the camera as if she's looking into me. She's both confident and comfortable, and although she isn't smiling or laughing in the photo, I can tell she's happy. Whenever this was taken, it was a good day for her, for us. Her eyes are screaming a thousand things in this photo, but the loudest is, "I love you, Silas." I stare at it a while longer and then place the photo back inside the locker. I check my phone to see if she's texted. She hasn't. I look around just as Landon approaches from down the hall. He tosses words over his shoulder as he passes me. "Looks like Brian isn't quite out of the picture yet, brother." The bell rings. I look in the direction Landon came from and see a heavier crowd of students at that end of the hallway. People seem to be stalling, glancing over their shoulders. Some are looking at me, some are fixated on whatever is at the end of the hallway. I begin to walk in that direction, and everyone's attention falls on me as I pass. A break in the crowd begins to shape, and that's when I see her. She's standing against a row of lockers, hugging herself with her arms. Brian is leaning against one of the lockers, looking at her intently. He looks deep in conversation, whereas she just appears guarded. He spots me almost immediately, and his posture stiffens along with his expression. Charlie follows his gaze until her eyes land on mine. As much as I can assume she doesn't need rescuing, relief falls over her as soon as we lock eyes. A smile tugs at her lips, and I want nothing more than to get him away from her. I spend 2 seconds deliberating. Should I threaten him? Should I hit him like I wanted so badly to hit him yesterday in the parking lot? Neither of these actions feels as though they'll make the point I want to make. "You should get to class," I hear her say to him. Her words are quick, a warning, as if she's afraid I've decided to punch him. She doesn't have to worry. What I'm about to do will hurt Brian Finley a hell of a lot more than if I were to just hit him. The second bell rings. No one moves. There are no students rushing to class to avoid being late. No one around me shuffles down the hall at the sound of the bell. They're all waiting, watching, expecting me to start a fight. I wonder if that's what the old Silas would do. I wonder if that's what the new Silas should do. I ignore everyone but Charlie and walk confidently toward her, keeping my eyes trained on her the entire time. As soon as Brian sees me approaching, he takes 2 steps away from her. I look directly at him while I stretch out my hand toward her, giving her the choice to take it and go with me, or remain where she is. I feel her fingers slide between mine and she grips my hand tightly. I pull her away from the lockers, away from Brian, away from the crowd of students. As soon as we round the corner, she drops my hand and stops walking. "That was a little dramatic, don't you think?" she says. I turn to face her. Her eyes are narrowed, but her mouth could pass for smiling. I can't tell if she's amused or angry. They expected a certain reaction from me. What'd you want me to do? Tap him on the shoulder and ask politely if I could cut in? She folds her arms over her chest. What makes you think I needed you to do anything? I don't understand her hostility. It seemed like we left on good terms last night, so I'm confused as to why she seems so angry with me. She rubs her hands up and down her arms, and then her eyes fall to the floor. Sorry, she mutters. She looks up at the ceiling and groans. I was just prodding him for information. That's the only reason I was with him in the hallway just now. I wasn't flirting. Her response catches me off guard. I don't like the look of guilt in her expression. That's not why I pulled her away from him. But I realize now that she thinks I really am upset with her for being with him. I could tell she didn't want to be there, but maybe she doesn't realize how well I've learned to read her. I take a step toward her. When she lifts her eyes to meet mine, I smile. Would it make you feel better to know I was cheating on you with the guidance counselor? She sucks in a quick rush of air, and shock registers on her face. You weren't the only one who wasn't committed to us, Charlie. Apparently, we both had issues we needed to work out, so don't be so hard on yourself. Relief probably isn't the reaction a girl should have to finding out her boyfriend has been cheating on her, but it's definitely what Charlie feels right now. I can see it in her eyes, and I can hear it in the pent-up breath she releases.
Wow, she says, her hands falling to her hips. So technically, we're tied.
Tied? I shake my head. This isn't a game I want to win, Charlie. If anything, I'd say we both lost. Her lips spread into a ghostly grin, and then she looks over her shoulder.
We should figure out where our classes are.
I remember the schedules and pull hers out of my back pocket. We're not together until fourth period history. You have English first. It's back in the other hallway, I say, motioning toward her first period classroom. She nods appreciatively and unfolds the schedule.
Smart thinking,
she says, glancing it over. She looks back up at me with a wicked smile.
I guess you got these from your guidance counselor mistress?
Her words make me wince, even though I shouldn't really feel remorse for whatever happened before yesterday.
Ex-guidance counselor mistress, I clarify with a grin.
She laughs, and it's a laugh of solidarity. As screwed up as our situation is and as confusing as the new information about our relationship is, the fact that we can laugh about it proves that we at least share in the absurdity of it all. And the only thought I have as I walk away from her is how much I wish Brian Finley could choke on her laugh. The first three classes of the day felt foreign. No one in them and nothing discussed seemed familiar to me. I felt like an imposter, out of place. But the instant I walked into fourth period and took a seat next to Charlie, my mood changed. She's familiar. My only familiar thing in a world of inconsistency and confusion. We stole a few glances at each other, but we never spoke during class. We aren't even speaking now as we enter the cafeteria together. I glance at our table and everyone from yesterday is already seated, save our two empty seats. I nudge my head toward the lunch line. Let's get our food first. She glances up at me briefly before looking back at the table.
I'm not really hungry, she says. I'll just wait for you at the table.
She heads in the direction of our group and I head toward the cafeteria line. After grabbing my tray and a Pepsi, I walk over to the table and take a seat. Charlie is looking down at her phone, excluding herself from the surrounding conversation. The guy to my right, Andrew, I think, elbows me.
Silas, he says, jabbing me repeatedly. Tell him how much I benched Monday.
I look up at the guy sitting across from us. He rolls his eyes and downs the rest of his soda before slamming it on the table.
Come on, Andrew. You think I'm stupid enough to believe your best friend wouldn't lie for you?
Best friend. Andrew is my best friend, yet I wasn't even sure of his name 30 seconds ago. My attention moves from the two of them to the food in front of me. I open my soda and take a sip, just as Charlie clenches her waist. It's loud in the cafeteria, but I still hear the rumble of her stomach. She's hungry.
If she's hungry, why isn't she eating?
Charlie, I lean in close to her. Why aren't you eating? She dismisses my question with a shrug. I lower my voice even more.
Do you have money?
Her eyes dart up to mine as if I just revealed a huge secret to the entire room. She swallows and then looks away, embarrassed.
No,
she says quietly.
I gave my last few dollars to Jeanette this morning. I'll be fine until I get home.
I set my drink down on the table and push my tray in front of her. Here, I'll go get another one. I stand and go back to the line and get another tray. When I return to the table, she's taken a few bites of the food. She doesn't tell me thank you, and I feel relieved. Making sure she has food to eat isn't a favor I want to be thanked for. It's something I hope she would expect from me.
Do you want to ride home today? I ask her, just as we're finishing up our meal.
Dude, you can't miss practice again. Andrew shoots in my direction. Coach won't let you play tomorrow night if you do. I rub a palm down my face, and then I reach in my pocket and retrieve my keys. Here, I tell her, placing them in her hand. Drive your sister home after school. Pick me up when practice is over. She tries to hand the keys back to me, but I won't take them.
Keep them, I tell her. You might need a car today, and I won't be using it.
Andrew interrupts.
You're letting her drive your car? Are you kidding me? You've never even let me sit behind the damn wheel.
I look over at Andrew and shrug.
You aren't the one I'm in love with. Charlie spits out her drink with a burst of laughter. I glance over at her, and her smile is huge. It lights up her entire face, somehow even making the brown of her eyes seem less dark. I may not remember anything about her, but I would bet her smile was my favorite part of her. This day has been exhausting. It feels like I've been on a stage for hours, acting out scenes I have no script for. The only thing that appeals to me right now is either being in my bed or being with Charlie, or maybe a combination of both. However, Charlie and I both still have a goal, and that's to figure out what the hell happened to us yesterday. Despite the fact that neither of us really wanted to bother with school today, we knew school could lead to an answer. After all, this did happen in the middle of the school day yesterday, so the answer could be related somehow. Football practice may be of some help. I'll be around people I haven't spent much time with in the last 24 hours. I might learn something about myself or about Charlie that I didn't know before, something that could shed some light on our situation. I'm relieved to find all the lockers have names on them, so it isn't hard to locate my gear. What is hard is trying to figure out how to put it on. I struggle with the pants, all the while trying to look like I know what I'm doing. The locker room slowly empties out as all the guys make their way to the field until I'm the only one left. When I think I've got everything situated, I grab my jersey off the top shelf of the locker to pull it on over my head. A box catches my eye, located in the back of the top shelf of my locker. I pull it toward me and take a seat on the bench. It's a red box, much larger than a box that would just contain a piece of jewelry. I pull the lid off and find a few pictures at the very top. There aren't any people in the pictures. They seem to be of places. I flip through them and come to a picture of a swing set. It's raining, and the ground beneath the swing is covered in water. I flip it over, and written on the back, it says, "Our first kiss." The next picture is of a back seat, but the view is from the floorboard looking up. I flip it over. "Our first fight." Third is a picture of what looks like a church, but it's only the picture of the doors, where we met. I flip through all the pictures until I finally get to a letter folded at the bottom of the box. I pick it up and unfold it. It's a short letter in my handwriting addressed to Charlie. I begin to read it, but my phone buzzes, so I reach over and unlock it. "Charlie, what time is your practice over?" "Me, not sure. I found a box of stuff in the locker room. Don't know if it'll help, but there's a letter in it." "Charlie, what does it say?"
"Silas!"
Someone yells from behind me. I spin around and drop two of the pictures in my hands. There's a man standing at the door with an angry look on his face.
"Get on the field!"
I nod, and he continues on down the hall. I put the pictures back in the box and set it back inside my locker. I take a deep, calming breath and make my way out to the practice field. Two lines are formed on the field, both rows of guys hunched forward and staring at the guy in front of them. There's an obvious opening, so I jog toward the empty spot and copy what the other players are doing.
"For shit's sake, Nash, why are you not wearing your shoulder pads?"
someone yells.
Shoulder pads, crap.
I skip out of line and run back to the locker room. This is going to be the longest hour of my life. It's odd I can't remember the rules of football. Can't be that hard, though. Just run back and forth a few times and practice will be over. I locate pads behind the row of lockers. Luckily, they're easy to put on. I rush back out onto the field and everyone is scattering, running around like ants. I hesitate before walking onto the field. When a whistle blows, someone shoves me from behind.
"Go!"
he yells, frustrated. The lines, the numbers, the goalposts, they mean nothing to me as I stand on the field amongst the other guys. One of the coaches shouts an order, and before I know it, the ball is being thrown in my direction. I catch it. What now? Run. I should probably run. I make it 3 feet before my face meets the AstroTurf. A whistle blows. A man yells. I stand up, just as one of the coaches stalks in my direction.
"What the hell was that? Get your damn head in the play!"
I look around me, the sweat beginning to trickle down my forehead. Landon's voice rings out behind me.
"Dude, what the hell is wrong with you?"
I turn and look at him just as everyone huddles around me. I follow their motions and lay my arms over the backs of the guys to my left and right.
No one speaks for several seconds, and then I realize they're all looking at me. Waiting. I think they want me to say something. I get the feeling it's not a prayer circle. You gonna call a play or what? The guy to my left says. I stutter. You, I point to Landon. Do that thing. Before they can question me, I pull apart and the huddle breaks. Coach is gonna bench him. I hear someone mumble behind me. A whistle blows, and before the sound even leaves my ears, a freight train crashes into my chest. Or at least it feels that way. The sky is above me. My ears are ringing. I can't pull in a breath. Landon is hovering over me. He grabs my helmet and shakes it. What the hell is wrong with you? He looks around and then back down at me. His eyes narrow. Stay on the ground. Act sick. I do what he says and he jumps up to a stand. I told him not to come to practice, coach, Landon says. He's had strep all week. I think he's dehydrated. I close my eyes, relieved for my brother. I kind of like this kid.
What the hell are you even doing here, Nash?
The coach is kneeling now.
Go to the locker room and get hydrated. We've got a game tomorrow night.
He stands and motions for one of the assistant coaches.
Get him a Z-pack and make sure he's ready for the field tomorrow.
Landon pulls me up. My ears are still ringing, but I'm able to breathe now. I make my way toward the locker rooms, relieved to be off the field. I should have never walked on in the first place. Not smart, Silas. I make it back to the locker room and change out of my gear. As soon as I get my shoes on, I hear footsteps nearing the locker room from down the hall. I glance around and spot an exit on the far wall, so I rush to it and push it open. Luckily, it leads right out to the parking lot. I'm immediately relieved to see my car. I rush over to it just as Charlie climbs out of the driver's side, hopping onto her feet as I approach. I'm so relieved to see her, to just have someone to relate to, that I don't even think about what I do next. I grab her wrist and pull her to me, wrapping my arms around her in a tight hug. My face is buried in her hair and I let out a sigh. She feels familiar, safe, makes me forget that I can't even remember.
What are you doing?
She's stiff against me. Her cold reaction reminds me that we don't do things like this. Silas and Charlie did things like this. Shit. I clear my throat and release her, taking a quick step back. Sorry, I mutter, force of habit.
We have no habits.
She pushes past me and walks around my car.
Do you think you've always been this mean to me? I ask her.
She looks at me from over the hood and nods.
My money's on yes. You're probably a glutton for punishment.
More like a masochist, I mutter. We both climb into my car, and I have two places I plan on going tonight. The first being my house to shower. But I'm sure if I asked her if she wanted to come along, she'd say no, just to spite me. Instead, I head in the direction of my house and don't give her a choice.
Why are you smiling?
She asks, 3 miles into our drive. I didn't realize I was. I shrug. Just thinking.
About what?
I glance at her and she's waiting for my answer with an impatient frown. I was wondering how the old Silas ever broke through your hard exterior. She laughs.
What makes you think he did?
I would smile again, but I don't think I've stopped. You saw the video, Charlie. You loved him. I pause for a second, then rephrase.
Me. You loved me.
She loved you, Charlie says, and then smiles. I'm not even sure if I like you yet. I shake my head with a soft laugh. I don't know myself very well, but I must have been extremely competitive because I just took that as a challenge.
Took what as a challenge? You think you can make me like you again?
I look over at her and give my head the slightest shake. No. I'm going to make you fall in love with me again. I can see the gentle roll of her throat as she swallows, but just as fast as she let her guard down, it flies back up. Good luck with that, she says, facing forward again.
I'm pretty sure you'll be the first guy to ever compete with himself over the affection of a girl.
Maybe so, I say, as we pull into my driveway. But my money's on me. I turn the car off and get out. She doesn't unbuckle. You coming? I need to take a quick shower. She doesn't even look at me.
I'll wait in the car.
I don't argue. I close the door and head inside to shower, thinking about the small smile I could swear was playing in the corner of her mouth. And while winning her over again isn't my main priority, it's definitely the new backup plan in case neither of us can figure out how to revert back to who we were before yesterday. Because even through all the bullshit, her cheating on me with Brian, me cheating on her with the counselor, our families in turmoil, we still obviously tried to make it work. There had to be something there, something deeper than attraction or a simple childhood bond that made me fight to keep her. I want to feel that again. I want to remember what it feels like to love someone like that, and not just anyone. I want to know what it feels like to love Charlie.
Chapter 11. Charlie. I'm standing on the edge of the lawn, looking down his street when he walks up behind me. I don't hear him approach, but I smell him. I don't know how, since he smells just like the outdoors. "What are you looking at?" he asks. I stare at the houses, each of them immaculate and manicured to the point of irritation. It makes me want to shoot a gun into the air, just to see all the quiet people inside scramble out. This neighborhood needs a little life breathed into it. It's strange how money seems to silence a neighborhood, I say quietly. On my street, where no one has money, it's so loud. Sirens blaring, people shouting, car doors slamming, stereos thumping. There's always someone somewhere making noise. I turn and look up at him, not expecting the reaction I have to seeing his damp hair and smooth jaw. I focus on his eyes, but that isn't much better. I clear my throat and look away. I think I prefer the noise. He takes a step until we're shoulder to shoulder, both staring at the taciturn street. No, you don't. You don't prefer either. He says this like he knows me, and I want to remind him he doesn't know me at all. But he puts his hand on my elbow. Let's get out of here, he says. Go do something that doesn't belong to Charlie and Silas. Something that's ours. You're talking about us like we're body invaders. Silas closes his eyes and tilts his head back. You have no idea how many times a day I think about invading your body. I don't intend to laugh as hard as I do, but I trip over my own feet, and Silas reaches down to catch me. We're both laughing as he rights me on my feet and rubs his hands up and down my arms. I look away. I'm tired of liking him. I only have a day and a half worth of memories, but they're all filled with me not hating Silas. And now he's made it his personal mission to make me love him again. It's annoying that I like it. Go away, I say. He raises his hands in surrender and takes a step back.
This far?
Farther. Another step.
Better.
Yes, I smart. Silas grins.
I don't know myself well, but I can tell I have a lot of game.
Oh, please, I say. If you were a game, Silas, you'd be Monopoly. You just go on and everyone ends up cheating just to be over with it. He's quiet for a minute. I feel bad for saying something so awkward, even if it was a joke.
You're probably right, he laughs.
That's why you cheated on me with that asshat Brian.
Lucky for you, I'm not Monopoly Silas anymore. I'm Tetris Silas. All my pieces and parts are gonna fit into all of your pieces and parts.
I snort. And the guidance counselors, apparently.
Low blow, Charlie,
he says, shaking his head. I wait a few seconds, chewing on my lip. Then I say, I don't think I want you to call me that. Silas turns to look at me.
Charlie?
Yeah. I look over at him. Is that weird? I don't feel like I'm her. I don't even know her. It just doesn't feel like my name. He nods as we walk toward his car.
So, I get to rename you?
Until we figure all this out, yeah.
Poppy,
he says. No.
Lucy.
Hell no, what's wrong with you? He opens the passenger side door to his Rover, and I climb in.
Okay. I can see you don't like traditionally cute names. We can try for something tougher.
He walks around to the driver's side and climbs in.
Xena.
No.
Rogue.
Ugh, no. We go back and forth like this until Silas's GPS tells us that we've arrived. I look around, surprised that I was too engaged with him to notice the drive here. When I look down at my phone, I see that Brian has texted me 6 times. I don't want to deal with him right now. I shove my phone and wallet under the seat, out of view. Where are we?
Bourbon Street, he says. Most happening place in New Orleans.
How do you know that? I ask suspiciously.
I Googled it.
We stare at each other over the hood, and then both shut our doors at the same time. How did you know what Google was?
I thought that's what we're supposed to be figuring out together.
We meet at the front of the car. I think we're aliens, I say. That's why we don't have any of Charlie and Silas's memories, but we remember things like Google and Tetris because of the computer chips in our brains.
So, can I rename you Alien?
Before I can think about what I'm doing, I send the back of my hand into his chest. Focus, Silas! He umphs, and then I'm pointing straight ahead. What's that? I walk ahead of him. It's a building, castle-like in structure, and white. There are 3 spires jutting up toward the sky.
Looks like a church,
he says, taking out his phone. What are you doing?
Taking a picture, in case we forget again. I figure we should document what's happening and where we go.
I'm quiet as I think about what he said. It's a really good idea. That's where we should go, right? Churches help people. My voice trails off.
Yes, says Silas. They help people, not aliens. And since we're...
I hit him again. I wish he would take this seriously. What if we're angels, and we're supposed to help someone, and we were given these bodies to fulfill our mission? He sighs.
Are you listening to yourself?
We've reached the doors to the church, which are ironically locked. Okay, I say, spinning around. What's your suggestion for what's happened to us? Did we boink our heads together and lose our memories? Or maybe we ate something that really messed us up? I storm down the stairs.
Hey, he calls. You're not allowed to get mad at me. This is not my fault.
He runs down the stairs after me. How do we know that? We don't know anything, Silas. This could be all your fault. We're standing at the bottom of the stairs now, staring at each other.
Maybe it is, he says. But whatever I did, you did it too. Because in case you haven't noticed, we're in the same boat.
I clench and unclench my fists, take deep breaths, concentrate on staring at the church until my eyes water.
Look,
Silas says, stepping closer.
I'm sorry for turning this into a joke. I want to figure it out as much as you do. What are some of your other ideas?
I close my eyes. Fairy tales, I say, looking back up at him. Someone is always cursed. To break the spell, they have to figure something out about themselves. Then...
Then what?
I can tell he's trying to take me seriously, but this somehow makes me angrier. There's a kiss. He grins.
A kiss, huh? I've never kissed anyone before.
Silas!
What? If I can't remember, it doesn't count.
I fold my arms across my chest and watch a street musician pick up his violin. He remembers the first time he picked up a violin, the first notes he played, who gave it to him. I envy his memories.
I'll be serious, Charlie. I'm sorry.
I look at Silas out of the corner of my eye. He looks genuinely sorry, hands shoved into his pockets, neck dropping like it's suddenly too heavy.
So, what do you think we need to do? Kiss?
I shrug. It's worth a try, right?
You said in fairy tales they have to figure something out first.
Yeah, like Sleeping Beauty needed someone brave to kiss her and wake her from the sleeping curse. Snow White needed True Love's kiss to bring her back to life. Ariel needed to get Eric to kiss her to break the spell the sea witch put on her. He perks up.
Those are movies, he says. Do you remember watching them?
I don't remember watching them. I just know I've seen them. Mr. Dietzen spoke about fairy tales in English today. That's where I got the idea. We start walking toward the street musician, who is playing something slow and mournful.
Sounds like the breaking of the curse is mostly up to the guy,
Silas says.
He needs to mean something to her.
Yeah. My voice drops off as we stop to listen. I wish I knew the song he was playing. It sounds like something I've heard, but I have no name for it. There's a girl, I say softly. I want to talk to her. I think maybe she knows something. A few people have referred to her as the shrimp. Silas's eyebrows draw together.
What do you mean? Who is she?
I don't know. She's in a couple of my classes. It's just a feeling. We stand among a group of onlookers, and Silas reaches for my hand. For the first time, I don't pull away from him. I let his warm fingers intertwine with mine. With his free hand, he takes a picture of the violinist. Then he looks down at me.
So I can remember the first time I held your hand.
Chapter 12. Silas. We've walked 2 blocks, and she hasn't let go of my hand yet. I don't know if it's because she likes holding it, or if it's because Bourbon Street is, well... Oh, God, she says, turning toward me. She fists my shirt in her hand and presses her forehead against my arm. That guy just flashed me, she says, laughing into the sleeve of my shirt. Silas, I just saw my first penis. I laugh as I continue steering her through the inebriated crowd of Bourbon Street. After walking a ways, she peeks up again. We're now approaching an even larger group of belligerent men, all without shirts. In the place of shirts are mounds of beads draped around their necks. They're all laughing and screaming at the people perched on the balconies above us. She squeezes my hand tighter until we've successfully navigated through them. She relaxes and puts more space between us. What's with the beads? She asks. Why would anyone spend money on such tacky jewelry? It's part of the Mardi Gras tradition, I tell her. I read about it when I was researching Bourbon Street. It started as a celebration for the last Tuesday before Lent, but I guess it's turned into a year-round thing. I pull her against my side and point down to the sidewalk in front of her. She sidesteps around what looks like puke. I'm hungry, she says. I laugh. Stepping over vomit made you hungry? No, vomit made me think of food, and food made my stomach growl. Feed me. She points to a restaurant up the street. The sign is flashing in red neon. Let's go there. She steps ahead of me, still gripping my hand. I glance down at my phone and follow her lead. I have 3 missed calls, one from Coach, one from my brother, and one from Mom. It's the first time I've thought about my mother. I wonder what she's like. I wonder why I haven't met her yet. My whole body crashes into the back of Charlie's after she stops short to let a vehicle pass. Her hand flies up to the back of her head where my chin smashed against it. Ouch, she says, rubbing her head. I rub my chin and watch from behind her as she pushes her hair forward over her shoulder. My eyes fall to the tip of what appears to be a tattoo peeking out from the back of her shirt. She begins walking again, but I grab her shoulder. Wait, I tell her. My fingers trail to the collar of her shirt and I pull it down a couple of inches. Right below the nape of her neck is a small silhouette of trees in black ink. I run my fingers over their outline. You have a tattoo. Her hand flies to the spot I'm touching. What? She shrieks. She spins around and looks up at me. I do not. You do. I turn her back around and pull the shirt down again. Here, I say, as I trace the trees again. This time I notice as chills break out on her neck. I follow the line of tiny bumps with my eyes, running over her shoulder and hiding beneath her shirt. I look back at the tattoo again because her fingers are now attempting to feel what I'm feeling. I take 2 of them and press them against her skin. A silhouette of trees, I tell her, right here. Trees, she says, cocking her head to the side. Why would I have trees? She turns around. I want to see it. Take a picture with your phone. I pull her shirt down enough so that she can see the entire tattoo, even though it's no more than 3 inches wide. I brush her hair over her shoulder again, not for the sake of the picture, but because I've really been wanting to do that. I also reposition her hand so that it's coming across the front of her body, draping over her shoulder.
Silas, she grumbles, just take the damn picture. This is an art class.
I grin and wonder if I'm always like this. If I refuse to take a simple picture, knowing it only takes a little bit more effort to make it exceptional. I bring the phone up and snap the picture, then look at the screen, admiring how good the tattoo looks on her. She spins around and takes the phone from my hands. She looks down at the picture and gasps.
Oh my God!
It's a very nice tattoo, I tell her. She hands me back my phone and rolls her eyes, walking again in the direction of the restaurant. She can roll her eyes all she wants. It doesn't change how she reacted to my fingers trailing across the back of her neck. I watch her walk toward the restaurant and realize that I have her figured out already. The more she likes me, the more closed off she becomes. The more sarcasm she inflicts on me. Vulnerability makes her feel weak, so she's pretending to be tougher than she really is. I think the old Silas knew this about her too, which is why he loved her, because apparently he liked the game they played. Apparently I do too, because once again, I'm following her. We walk through the door of the restaurant and Charlie says, "Two people, booth please," before the hostess even has a chance to ask. At least she said please.
"Right this way," the woman says.
The restaurant is quiet and dark, a stark contrast to the noise and neon lights of Bourbon Street. We both breathe a collective sigh of relief once we're seated. The waitress hands us our menus and takes our drink order. Every now and then, Charlie lifts a hand to the back of her neck as if she can feel the outline of the tattoo. "What do you think it means?" she says, still staring at the menu in front of her. I shrug. "I don't know. Maybe you liked forests?" I glance up at her. "These fairy tales you talked about, did they all take place in forests? Maybe the man who needs to break your spell with a kiss is a strapping lumberjack living in the woods." Her eyes meet mine and I can tell my jokes are aggravating her. Or maybe she's aggravated because she thinks I'm funny.
"Stop making fun of me," she says.
"We woke up without our memories at the exact same time, Silas. Nothing is more absurd than that, even fairy tales with lumberjacks." I smile innocently and look down at my hand. "I have calluses," I tell her, lifting my hand and pointing at the rough skin of my palm. "I could be your lumberjack." She rolls her eyes again but laughs this time. "You probably have calluses from jerking off too much." I hold up my right hand. "But they're on both hands, not just my left."
"Ambidextrous," she deadpans.
We both grin as our drinks are placed in front of us.
"Ready to order?" the waitress asks.
Charlie quickly scans the menu and says,
"I hate that we can't remember what we like."
She looks up at the waitress.
"I'll take a grilled cheese," she says. "It's safe."
"Burger and fries, no mayo," I tell her. We hand her back our menus and I refocus on Charlie. "You aren't 18 yet. How could you get a tattoo?"
"Bourbon Street doesn't seem to be a stickler for the rules," she says. "I probably have a fake ID hidden somewhere."
I open the search engine on my phone. I'll try to figure out what it means. I've gotten pretty good at this Google thing. I spend the next few minutes searching every possible meaning of trees and forests and clusters of trees. Just when I think I'm onto something, she pulls my phone away and sets it on the table.
"Get up," she says, as she stands. "We're going to the bathroom."
She grabs my hand and pulls me out of the booth.
"Together?"
She nods.
"Yep."
I look at the back of her head as she walks away from me, then back at the empty booth.
"What the? Come on," she says over her shoulder.
I follow her to the hallway that leads to the restrooms. She pushes open the women's and peeks inside, then pulls her head out.
"It's a single stall. It's empty," she says, holding the door open for me.
I pause and look at the men's restroom, which looks perfectly fine, so I don't know why she's...
"Silas!"
She grabs my arm and pulls me inside the restroom. Once we're inside, I half expect her to wrap her arms around my neck and kiss me, because why else would we be in here together?
"Take off your shirt." I look down at my shirt. I look back up at her. Are we about to make out? Because I didn't picture it going down like this. She groans and reaches forward, pulling at the hem of my shirt. I help her pull it over my head when she says, "I want to see if you have any tattoos, dumbass." I deflate. I feel like an 18-year-old who's just been blueballed. I guess I kind of am. She turns me around, and when I face the mirror, she gasps. Her eyes are fixated on my back. My muscles tense beneath her touch as her fingertips meet my right shoulder blade. She traces a circle, spanning a radius of several inches. I squeeze my eyes shut and try to control my pulse. I suddenly feel drunker than everyone on Bourbon Street combined. I'm gripping the counter in front of me because her fingers, my skin. Jesus, I groan, dropping my head between my shoulders. Focus, Silas. What's wrong? She asks,